I've seen this movie before, that one ends in tears. I can tell you exactly what happened.
It's early days.
They don't get it, and they don't seem to care.
Oh, Kate's getting worse, doesn't he? He's just chasing his tail.
A government that is bitterly divided.
We've got to raise the standards of journalism a little bit here.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis from RN Drive.
And I'm Raphael Epstein from ABC Radio Melbourne.
Welcome to the party room, loyal listeners. Mm-hmm. You're probably wondering, where's Fran? Well, she's taken a little mini break, but I need my politics fix. More importantly, I know that you need your politics fix. So Raph is here to help out. He's been here before. He's actually kind of a regular, but he's my co-host today and next week.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here.
So Parliament's back. Daniela Ritorto will be stopping by the party room a little later to bring us her view from the press gallery. She's the Chief Political Correspondent and Parliament House Bureau Chief for SBS News. So lots happening. But Raph, it's all about energy, right?
Well, you want your energy to be affordable. You want it to be reliable. The government asks the people who run the grid, the Australian Energy Market Operator, to tell them what they need to do into the future.
And they got a bit of an answer. So what we now know is that the government wants to pay businesses to be on standby to contribute power to the system over summer because there's been a warning of blackouts.
I interviewed the head of AEMO and I asked, you know, have we got a problem this summer? And her response was, well, no, there's no problem. We've got planning. So those numbers about the risk, they come before all of the mitigating measures that the operator and others have undertaken. It's like reading the entrails of a freshly slaughtered animal at the temple. It depends on how you read those entrails, what AEMO is trying to say.
What we do know, though, is that there is a genuine issue. There is a planning issue. There's an investment issue. There's no contest over that. No. That's a fact, right? The $50 million would be passed on to consumers. That's a bit of an issue. I don't know how consumers would feel about that. There's been a bit of a debate of whether the GST should be removed from electricity.
Surely that's not going to fly.
Well, the PM's already rejected that and said it'd be passed on in some other way. And then, big story of the week, the PM indicated he wanted to sell the Liddell Power Station. AGL runs it and owns it. It says it has no commitment to sell the station or extend its working life. But as happens in our weird political world, this played out on Twitter where we had the head of AGL kind of having a discussion with Tony Abbott, yes, Tony Abbott, about the future of this power station.
Let's do the countdown because it is a perfect illustration of why the coalition's internal troubles and internal dilemmas and divisions are directly impacting on you, on energy. So Matt Canavan, the former resources minister, picking up on the prime minister saying that AGL and he are chatting about who might buy the Liddell Power Station.
AGL are the biggest hypocrites walking around Australia at the moment. They are the largest coal-fired power producers in Australia and at the same time spending thousands of dollars on ads saying they're getting out of coal. When you read the fine print, they're not getting out of coal to 2050.
So think of Liddell this way, right? It is the Datsun 120B of power stations, right? Nobody wants it. So how much are Matt Canavan and Tony Abbott helping? Matt Canavan starts by attacking people who are selling the car, right? AGL are not being hypocrites. They've been saying for years, I think they said in 2015 they wanted to get out of Liddell. Also, they're saying to the stock exchange, when you're not supposed to mislead people, that they're not selling and that they want to close it. So you're already accusing them of saying one thing publicly and another thing privately. Then you pile in with hypocrisy. Then Tony Abbott comes in, chiming in on Twitter, cheering on Matt Canavan, and he says, good that AGL is no longer getting out of coal. And then, boom, the AGL chairman, Andy Vesey, tweets back, Tony, we are getting out of coal. Who's got the whip hand, Patricia?
Tony Abbott over-egged it, to be honest, because he didn't understand the nuance in what the Prime Minister was saying. Now, whatever your views on how this should all look, and I know there were a variety of views, but ultimately what everyone agrees on is that you need a solution in the short term and in the long term in terms of planning.
You need an energy policy, Patricia.
You need an energy policy. The Prime Minister this week talked exclusively almost about energy, and North Korea was the other subject. That's what he wants to be doing. So whatever you make of it, this is a Prime Minister that now has managed to get back on message when the Labor Party wanted to be talking about Barnaby Joyce, citizenship and other issues.
And who's dragging them off message though, Patricia? It's Tony Abbott. It's Matt Canavan actually, who wants to nationalise the electricity industry. If the government actually wants to have that negotiation, they are not helping.
Delta Electricity is exploring whether to make an offer for the Liddell Power Station to add another asset to its portfolio. There is actually something going on.
This is how helpful they
are. It's something.
Matt Canavan and Tony Abbott cheer them on. Delta get on the television and say, yeah, no, we're interested. However, to buy this clapped out 120B, we want to get money from the fund that's devoted to electric cars. That's what they were saying. They want money from ARENA, the Renewable Energy Agency. This is not the message that they want to be sold. Just by the way, AEMO, when I interviewed the head of AEMO and I asked, is the solution to the closure of Liddell keeping it open? The long answer ended with household storage and batteries. So they are technology agnostic. You don't have to keep old coal going. That's a path they've been given by Alan Finkel.
It is. And let's get back to that. That's part of the pathway. So the pathway quite clearly said you don't build new ones, but whether you extend the life of existing ones to deal with what is potentially a crisis in terms of, you know, not having enough in our power supply, well, that's a genuine issue. Bill Shorten, though, saying businesses are getting screwed at the moment, and let's call it as it is, the power of large energy companies, their ruthless pursuit of profits above all else is hurting Australia. An interesting way of positioning on this, and as you say, it is reflected a little bit in community sentiment. I do get a lot of text messages saying, it's the privatisation, Patricia, call it out. And, well, it's one part of a bigger story.
Simple issue for the government. Old coal, new coal, that's not the crucial thing. They just want something. They need some certainty. And the big road bump, if we think, and we'll get on to same-sex marriage, but if we thought that same-sex marriage was a problem for the coalition, this is a massive road bump. They've got to get over that speed hump and deliver a policy.
And Labor's response has been pretty political, as you'd expect, saying, hang on a minute, you're talking about the AEMO report, you're talking about the, you know, immediate issues, but you've done no long-term planning and you haven't yet responded to the 50th Finkel recommendation. That's what Labor keeps saying.
Because everyone knows what the 50th Finkel recommendation is.
I love the 50th, the 49, everyone's accepted, it's all going to happen, but the 50th.
So Eve Shorten's willing to bash the big energy companies and Turnbull wants to be seen flying up around the Snowy, building what he calls the biggest battery in the Southern Hemisphere. What are people hearing, PK? Who do you think's actually winning an energy debate?
Because can I be really honest?
Yeah.
I don't think people are really
tuned in.
No, and I think not into the politics and the detail. I think mostly people just want their energy bills to go down. If you look at the polling, when you ask them the blunt question on renewables, they're big fans, but they also want, you know,
as long as they don't have to pay for it.
That's right. And they want their energy to come cheaply. So if the Prime Minister can manage to deliver that in some way, well, he will have success, I think. Can he, though? Well, this is the big question.
It's one of the most complex policy areas we have, and it's the test of whether or not democracy works. You can talk about who's winning the debate in terms of perceptions of voters. One thing we also know, the longer you put off a solution, the more it costs. So you've got that tactical battle, and who knows who's going to win it. Long-term, strategically, we need a solution.
We're recording this on a Thursday morning. We're still awaiting a verdict. So by the time many of you are listening, we'll have an outcome. We'll bring you the newest, latest on that. Broadly, this High Court challenge has been about whether the government can spend this money. That's really at the heart of this High Court challenge.
When they can spend your money, how they can spend your money, and whether or not they need parliamentary approval. So what's basically happened in the High Court, there's been two different groups that have challenged the plan to do this voluntary survey. They say it is unconstitutional. Their focus is whether it is lawful to allocate money from a fund when that fund is set aside for, quote, urgent and unforeseen items. What the Commonwealth says, and they said this to the High Court justices, they have appropriated the money lawfully. There's nothing untoward in the policy. It's an alternative to taking to the issue to the people. And they couldn't take the issue to the people because the Senate rejected their plan for a plebiscite. What we also know is the case was heard urgently, and there's a reason it was heard urgently. They were printing the stuff.
Well, they have
already
to print it. Yeah,
because they've got to send it out next week.
Got to send it out. You've got to have it ready. I'm seeing from the No case what I think is really smart campaigning, can I say? Really smart, where they've recalibrated the debate to make themselves effectively victims, that they are victims of an assault on their freedom, victims by the so-called, you know, militant rainbow lobby to silence them. And I reckon they're getting a bit of traction on this.
They're getting a lot of traction. Let's not forget who's really being bullied. We cannot get away from the fact that every time we talk about this, it has an impact on people. There's no doubt. Self-harm, mental health for people who are not heterosexual, especially when they're at school, is an extremely big problem. Let's take that as an accepted and given fact. You are right. The No campaign, number one, they're more unified. they have a really clear objective. Number two, they are shifting the debate away from the question that they know they have lost. They know that the surveys, 60 to 80% of the country agree with you when you pose the question, should two men be able to get married or should two women be able to get married?
That's why they want it to be about lots of other issues. 100%. They want it to be about children, surrogacy. They want it to become an issue about what's taught at schools, parental autonomy, rules in the classroom, this so-called militant agenda. I mean, as a campaign strategy.
It works.
Of course it does.
What I'm unsure about is who is hearing that message. Are the people who are really agitated and want to vote no hearing that message? Yes, they are. The uncertain people, what are they hearing? Are they hearing that effective no campaign, or are they at the end of the day going to go, oh yeah, well, you know, the question is what resonates. You're right, it's a good tactic. I'm not sure it carries through.
If the postal survey goes ahead, it's been a funny period. Not everyone completely out of the blocks because they're waiting to have this settled. But if it does go ahead, it's all on.
ABC Breaking News.
The effect of the decision of the court is that there is now no legal impediment to that postal survey proceeding and all Australians having their say on this important social question.
Hey, party room listeners, it's me. I'm in a hotel room. I'm in transit. And the High Court ruling on the same-sex marriage postal survey has been handed down. So I'm dropping back into the podcast just to keep you up to date, given it's quite a significant ruling. The High Court has cleared the way for the federal government to run a voluntary postal vote on same-sex marriage. So what does it mean? It means the two groups that had asked the court to find that the government's plans were unconstitutional have been unsuccessful. It means the marriage law survey forms will be mailed over a two-week period from the 12th of September with a reply paid envelope and the instructions to return by October the 27th. It's on. The campaign is on. The Attorney General and the Finance Minister say the government will move quickly ahead with legislation for so-called additional safeguards for the postal survey. You're going to have to keep updated on RM Breakfast and Drive to find out what those safeguards will include. But what's the political stocktake? It is a massive win for the government. It means that it can go forward with its postal survey. It doesn't need to come up with a plan B, which would have split the government with some people wanting to cross the floor and others, including Tony Abbott, wanting to stick to the plebiscite policy. So it goes forward. The yes and the no campaigns are already rolling out ads. So it's on. Okay, back to the show now.
Hey, PK, should we bring our guest in?
Let's do it. Welcome to the party room, Daniella. Take a seat, grab a drink, get very comfortable.
Done and done. Thanks, Patricia. Thanks, Raf, for having me on.
Hey, look, all three of us have spent a lot of time talking about this issue, dual citizenship. It's been dominating the last few weeks. I guess you're probably wondering if this conversation will ever end. Bill Shorten, the opposition leader, did finally produce those documents proving he has no questions to answer. After question time, he did that on Monday. Daniella, why do you reckon he changed his mind?
I think he had to, Raf. I think it was a bit of a distraction on their side in terms of the strength of their argument. I think if you're going to be in hot, full throttle pursuit of the Deputy Prime Minister of this country over this issue, then you better show the public that you've got all of your own ducks in a row. I know that the Labor people behind the scenes have been sweating on this idea for a couple of weeks. They were resisting it because there's this implication that we're all guilty until proven innocent if everyone has to, produce documents to any accusation. But I think holding it up in the Parliament, bit of a theatrical flourish, I think it was the smart thing to do.
But interestingly, it happened after Tony Abbott stood up and sort of demanded that he do it, holding up his own document, which he only recently really showed the public, didn't he, Raf?
Well, that line, so Tony Abbott kind of steals the thunder on Monday morning. I'd be interested to know what you think, Daniella, because the government clearly wanted to talk about North Korea and energy, but it's Tony Abbott who says, show it or shut up. And the show it is, you know, come on, Bill, show us your documents. And then Labor drags that out a little bit, and I think every single question, well, all this week, but every question was deliberately designed on Monday to get the Prime Minister to talk about it. And I think Malcolm Turnbull said to Shorten, what's he got to hide? What do you think of the tactics, Daniella? And, like, do they matter?
I've had a bit of a think about this, and it was a cracking short slogan from Tony Abbott again, wasn't
it? He's so good
at
them.
Show it or shut it. He's great at them. And that actually flushed out a few of the old lines about, oh, you know, there you go, there's Tony Abbott, our most effective attack dog. He flushed out Bill Shorten. But I think you're right, Raf. I think there was a little bit of goading and game playing, etc. Why does any of it matter? I actually don't think it does. I don't think Labor is playing to the public this week.
No.
My sense of it is that this week, they don't care if they've lost the public conversation. This week's been about the internals, and sometimes the internals can, you know, set the tone for what happens outside of this place. And my sense is that what the opposition wanted to do was spend an entire week just reminding the government that it does hold on to power by a thread, and that it was there keeping its foot on the throat of the Turnbull government. And whether it lost the week publicly, whether it did look a bit, you know, too concerned with internal tactics, etc., I think it doesn't mind that.
Interestingly, the government, I think, was very successful in making the argument. You know, you're not asking about North Korea. You don't seem to be interested in energy. All you want to do is play the politics. Now, forget the irony that this has happened before. You know, you remember the ridiculous theatrics during the Gillard government, now ridiculous theatrics on the other side. Yes, the High Court will determine Barnaby Joyce's eligibility. It's all set to happen in October.
But isn't that the point, PK? Because I wasn't aware that there was a record to break, but Labor's done it repeatedly, Daniela. They've broken the record. You're effectively saying, I guess, Bill Shorten wants to get inside Malcolm Turnbull's head. I remember watching Leighton Hewitt play Roger Federer, and Federer always got inside Leighton Hewitt's head before a match and won practically every time. Is it working? Are the government unnerved by what Labor's doing?
I'm not so sure, because I think I agree with PK on this one, that I think the Prime Minister's line that he trotted out from very early on Monday, that, yeah, talk about dual citizenship all you want. You know what? I've got a crisis on energy that I'm trying to solve. We've got a geopolitical crisis, North Korea, that I'm getting on with the business. Talk about dual citizenship. Talk about Barnaby Joyce as much as you want. I'm getting on with business. Yeah. But I wasn't here. I was out of Australia from 2010 to 2016. So I missed the whole
Gillard,
Abbott, Turnbull thing. Oh,
it was
happening.
Just such a delightful time.
So I have to take everyone's word that this is a payback, and that these tactics is whole, oh, it must be 10 to 3. I must set my watch to the suspension of standing orders. For me, I'm watching this in the last few weeks as something quite new. Yeah. I didn't see any of those tactics. Although I have to say that even when I was in London, and I don't know if we ran it as a news wipe or something, I do remember that vision of Tony Abbott and Christopher Pine bolting out of the chamber.
Yeah. It was always so comical. It was like a cartoon. But, you know, what they've been trying to do is really question the legitimacy of this government. And they've decided to do that consistently all week. They've answered every time we've put it to them. I'm sure you two have, Raf, but I've said, don't you care about North Korea? Don't you care about energy? And they say, yeah, we do care. And we're asking those questions in other places. Basically, you know,
well, they're conceding that you don't debate the big issues
they are.
In question time.
Question time, you know, yeah, we're talking about what we think is the legitimacy of the government. We had Anne Toomey on RN Drive this week. She's a constitutional law expert. I thought what she had to say about ministers like Barnaby Joyce, who are under a citizenship cloud, was really interesting.
My suspicion is that in the background, even though Barnaby Joyce continues to be minister and so does Fiona Nash, my suspicion is that they are deliberately delaying any important and contestable decisions, and I would hope that's what they're doing.
So do you reckon they're doing that, Daniela?
If they are doing that on the quiet, I think that's prudent.
Yes.
I still haven't heard a sensible explanation for the differentiation between standing down Matt Canavan and keeping Nash and Joyce position.
That's because there isn't one. They did it on the run and they made a mistake.
Yeah, and like, again, I've sort of tossed this around in my mind. I thought, would it have been prudent for someone like a Barnaby Joyce, who has that cut-through ability to talk to people and to say, hey, look, this is an epic blunder that's happened here. I reckon I'm going to be in the clear, but in the meantime, I'm going to bench myself until this is all sorted out. I'm going to keep working for you, but please, you know, understand and bear with me. Would that have worked with the public, or would that have left just far too much of a gap, a vulnerability in terms of this government's hold on the parliament?
Well, again, they've got to make the calculation. Most people don't follow the ins and outs of dual citizenship. The one theme that comes through, and I'm sure the government will be hoping it doesn't resonate too much, is, well, hold on, I can't break the rules. I can't question my speeding fine. So how come these guys can stuff up those sorts of rules? How come the politicians don't have to follow the rules, but I do? Labor doesn't push that. I'm not sure how much cost there is to Labor doing that, or the government having Barnaby still there.
And in the background to all of this, we've already mentioned it in terms of the government critiquing Labor for not being interested enough, but there's North Korea. You know, we talk about energy. Yeah, it is interesting. We talk about energy, and I do think it's a key issue. Same-sex marriage, the internals of dual citizenship, the parliamentary theatrics. But here we have a genuine crisis, international crisis on our hands. On Wednesday, Malcolm Turnbull had a half-hour phone call with President Trump. You know, we heard that it all went well, Daniela. I mean, we always find out later, let's be honest, if it did. I reckon chances are this one did go well because, you know, I don't think our refugee swap deal came up, did it?
I don't think so, no. And I think the two men, perhaps this time, had proper business at hand to discuss, although I did sort of wonder if I need to read about the full transcript in the Washington Post, perhaps in a couple of weeks' time. Let's hope not. But this is a serious issue, extremely serious issue. I mean, the Prime Minister, again, on Thursday morning, he's doing the rounds, and I think this is the right thing to do, of all the morning shows on television, the radio shows as well, talking about the contingencies that are now in place for Australians who are abroad in the region, in China, in South Korea and Japan, and it's tens of thousands of people. The government's saying, please register with DFAT, so if anything, you know, happens and we need to think about the worst case scenario, getting Aussies back, you know, you'll just get a message on your smartphone, etc. I think it's right that this is being treated with, you know, the utmost seriousness.
And Labor is also sort of taking a bit of a role. They're criticised for not talking about it enough, but they are planning around this.
Bill Shorten and Penny Wong, they're going to travel to South Korea, which on the one hand I think is, you know, I guess you go and check out the situation on the ground. Am I being too cynical and questioning if that's all grandstanding, Daniela?
Possibly. Look, I don't have a problem with it. If more and more of our political leaders are engaged and informed and educated and having up-to-the-minute discussions and a feel for the situation, I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. Sure, is it Bill Shorten trying to, you know, perhaps appear or present himself as prime ministerial? Maybe, but I think so what? I don't think it's going to hurt anyone.
I reckon it's one of those issues. You know, I do my, you know, everyone's got their own pub test. We all have people in our lives who don't consume news and the media.
The normal people.
Yeah, I'm related. Well, I'm related to a lot of them. And they mention North Korea as their first point.
They 100% say,
are we going to be safe? Is this, they're worried about Donald Trump. They're worried about Kim Jong-un. They're worried about these figures. This is actually a key issue. So, you know, it makes sense that our political leaders start engaging with trying to provide some answers about what our strategy might be, because this is the top issue for people beyond their own domestic concerns, obviously about cost of living and other issues.
100% agree. And that's why I think, as I said, the Prime Minister is right to be, you know, on a bit of a media blitz on this.
Hey, Daniela, you have been such a fab guest. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks very much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Daniela.
Okay, Raf, it's time for trading preferences. What do you got for us?
I've got to go the Logies, PK. Now, you have to go the Logies. The Victorian government stripped away the massive amount of taxpayer dollars. I didn't know this. They pay $1 million a year to have the Logies in.
What's wrong with that?
No. Well, firstly, I'm not going to make my trading preference Carl Stefanovic, who's going to boycott the Logies if they're not in Melbourne.
Because Kevin Andrews, he got the name wrong,
right,
didn't he?
I am not also going to nominate him for confusing the socialist left ALP Premier of Victoria, Daniel Andrews, with the hard right, hard man of the Coalition Party room, Kevin Andrews. They're both from Melbourne, but Carl mixed that up. No, my trading preference goes to the Gold Coast Mayor, Councillor Tom Tate. People in Melbourne, of course, were saying, you can't send the Logies to a tacky place like the Gold Coast. And this was his retort.
I can turn around and say that it's befitting, because it's a tacky industry coming in a tacky city. Mate, it goes well, hand in hand.
Give him full marks for owning the tacky badge, and while deriding others for accusing his locale of being tacky, he proudly wears the label.
I loved it on so many levels. So mine is, mine is so good, but it's a very visual experience.
Yours is cruel.
Mine is cruel but good. So the Prime Minister played basketball.
Oh, no.
I know he invented the internet practically. Little exaggeration. I know he's very good at many things, but sport probably not his thing. I know he's good at rowing, maybe. I've seen him rowing.
Oh, he's a sea kayaker.
Yeah. Kayaking, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. To me,
it's very different, PK. Rowing, you're facing away from where you're going.
Oh, look.
Sea kayaking, you're looking to
believe
the future.
Me, at the kind of schools I went to, we didn't row. Anyway, but what I can tell you is that he played basketball. In the video, Turnbull is shown standing, like he's close to the basketball hoop, holding a basketball, and he's like staring at it, willing for some, like, God to intervene so he can get it in.
Or a staffer.
Before he starts, he looks around like, is someone going to save me? Because he knows that he shouldn't be doing this. No one saves him. No one intervenes. He has to shoot it in Perth. It's WA. They're struggling in WA too. This is a very important shoot. This is a very important shot. Misses it. And of course, it goes kind of viral. It's sad. But it's one of those things where you don't want that picture, right? You don't want that footage.
But
for
all
many
politicians,
reasons.
When handed a ball, should hand it back.
Because that's why they're politicians. That's why they're not sportsmen. That's it from us from the Party Room today. Love to know what you think. Send us tweets using the hashtag #ThePartyRoom. That way we can find you. You can also email us anytime. Send us your thoughts. Send us your opinions.
Leave us a review. We love reviews. We live for them. More importantly, if you leave a review at the place you go to get your podcast, that will help other people find The Party Room. So if you leave a review, other people will discover The Party Room podcast.
It's one of those winning things. As always, you can hear more political analysis and interviews from both of us every weekday. ABC Melbourne Drive, but actually, for next week, he's going to be on RN Drive, so you can hear him there. And next week, Raf will do that all week. I will be filling in for Fran. Basically, just get on RN. Just listen to the ABC wall to wall. Just do it.
That's what we do. See you later, PK.
Bye.